Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Ezekiel chapter 13, which I will entitle False Prophets Condemned. This prophecy was given just after the prophecies of the previous chapter 12. Israel was given a new heart in chapter 12, or prophesied that they were going to get a new heart. The prophecy in the last chapter was given somewhere around 592-590, same time frame as this prophecy. Between 592 and 590, of course, is a few years before the siege of Babylon begins in 588, and Jerusalem was destroyed in 586. So we begin now in verses 1 through 7 of Ezekiel 13. The word of the Lord came to me, Son of man, prophesy against the prophets of Israel who are now prophesying. Say to those who prophesy out of their own imagination, hear the word of the Lord. This is what the sovereign Lord says. Woe to the foolish prophets who follow their own spirit and have seen nothing. Your prophets, O Israel, are like jackals among ruins. You have not gone up to the breaks in the wall to repair it for the house of Israel, so that it will stand firm in the battle on the day of the Lord. Their visions are false, and their divinations a lie. They say, the Lord declares, when the Lord has not sent them. Yet they expect their words to be fulfilled. Have you not seen false visions and uttered lying divinations when you say, the Lord declares, though I have not spoken? Now, chapter 13 is a running denunciation against false prophets. Verse 2, God tells Ezekiel, son of man, prophesy against the prophets of Israel. Now, who are these prophets? Well, they could be prophets in the land of Israel, or they could be prophets in Babylon, prophesying to the exiles, or they could be in both places, false prophets. I suspect it's both places. Now, God tells Ezekiel, or calls Ezekiel, the son of man. I've mentioned this many, many times in previous audios. This is the standard title that God gives Ezekiel. Why? Two options. One is that God is trying to keep Ezekiel humble. Son of means having the characteristics of. So Ezekiel is said to have the characteristics of a man. He's finite. He puts his pants on one leg at a time. He's not a god. He needs to be humble. But I don't think that's why God called Ezekiel son of man. I believe that God is trying to make a type out of Ezekiel. Ezekiel is a true prophet prophesying against the false prophets of Israel, against the false rulers of Israel who have raised their fist against Yahweh, just like Jesus was prophesying against the false prophets of Israel in his day and the false leaders of Israel in his day. And Ezekiel predicted the destruction of the temple and Jerusalem. So did Jesus. On the Olivet Discourse, he said, not one stone of this temple will be standing on another stone before this generation passes away. So Ezekiel makes a great type of the antitype Jesus. Son of man, prophesy against the prophets of Israel. Say to these people, these prophets, these false prophets who are prophesying out of their own imagination, how are they prophesying? Where they were saying, hey, the Babylonians aren't coming. The Babylonians aren't going to bother us. We have our walls around the city. Well, this is what the sovereign Lord says, and that's the common title for that Yahweh calls himself in the book of Ezekiel. And that's the common title that Yahweh calls himself by in the book of Ezekiel. Sovereign Lord, he can send the Babylonian army to wipe out Jerusalem despite the walls of Jerusalem. He can do it. He did do it, as a matter of fact, as history later showed. And so the sovereign Lord said, you false prophets are foolish. You follow your own spirit. You prophesy what you want to. Reminds me of all those prophets before the last election who wanted Trump to win, and they so prophesied, and he didn't win. These false prophets have seen nothing, Yahweh says. Now, one could argue that means that they are prophesying about things that they haven't seen, and so therefore are intentionally deceitful. They're liars. In verse 7, God says that these false prophets have seen false visions and uttered lying divinations. But I must point out to you, it might not be the false prophets who are lying. It could be the demons who are behind the false prophets. And the demons are lying to the false prophets, and the false prophets foolishly believe the demons. Either way, they're still guilty. It's just a question of who's lying on purpose. The false prophets or the demons who are energizing the false prophets. Verse 4, Yahweh says that these false prophets are like jackals. Now, let me read you from the website, pbs.org. Please forgive me for citing PBS. I despise that organization, but they have a good description of a jackal on their website. The jackal has a bad reputation. Ancient Egyptians believed they were gods of the underworld, and that their evening yips and yowls were the haunting songs of the dead. Modern cultures dismiss them as cold-hearted and calculated killers, the vicious thugs of the animal world. Now, I did a little looking around on the internet because I live in a rural area which is badly afflicted by coyotes. They're everywhere out here. And I discovered that a coyote is a cousin to the jackal. They're basically two brands of the same thing. And at night, they do yip and yowl. And their yips and yowls do sound like the haunting songs of the dead. It is creepy. It is awful. No wonder that modern cultures dismiss them as cold-hearted and calculated killers, the vicious thugs of the animal world. They will also, these coyotes will, they'll attack little babies. They'll attack dogs that are smaller than them and eat them. They're nasty. They're hungry. They're ravenous. So that's a great metaphor there. A great description of these false prophets. And they're like jackals walking around among ruins. The ruins, of course, are the ruins of Jerusalem. The ruins of Judah. They're not ruined yet, but they're going to be in a few short years. Now in verse 5, Yahweh doesn't say that Israel is ruined yet, but he does say that the walls are broken down. There's breaches in the wall, breaks in the wall. They need to be fixed, but the false prophets aren't fixing them. So the house of Israel will not be able to stand firm in the battle on the day of the Lord. The day of the Lord, of course, is the day that the Babylonians come and wipe them out. So instead of preparing the people for the disaster that's coming, the false prophets are giving false assurances. You don't need to worry. Everything is all right. In verse 6, God says that these false prophets have visions that are false and their divinations a lie, again, either from the false prophets or the demons behind the false prophets. These false prophets say, the Lord declares, speaking in the name of God. That's serious business, because you're speaking lies, and God is not a God that he should lie. Here's what John Gill says about this. By their solemn way of speaking, by the use they made of the name of the Lord, by the strong assurances they gave, and by their frequent repetition of their predictions, they deceived people. God says this. Verse 7, have you not seen false visions, God says, and uttered lying divinations? Again, it's either the demons or the prophets that are lying, but God is the God of truth. We go now to Ezekiel 13, verses 8 through 12. Therefore, this is what the sovereign Lord says. Because of your false words and lying visions, I am against you, declares the sovereign Lord. My hand will be against the prophets who see false visions and utter lying divinations. They will not belong to the council of my people or be listed in the records of the house of Israel, nor will they enter the land of Israel. Then you will know that I am the sovereign Lord. Because they lead my people astray, saying, peace, when there is no peace. And because when a flimsy wall is built, they cover it with whitewash. Therefore tell those who cover it with whitewash that it is going to fall. Rain will come in torrents, and I will send hailstones hurtling down, and violent winds will burst forth. When the wall collapses, will people not ask you, where is the whitewash you covered it with? So verses 8 and 9 basically say that I'm against you, false prophets. You're liars. And then at the end of verse 9, God says that you, false prophets, will not belong to the council of my people. In other words, you will not be a leader of my people. You will not be listed in the records of the house of Israel. Now, God is referring there to the roll or register of those who return from captivity from Babylon. So there will be a return. There will be a restoration of Israel, but the false prophets aren't going to get to participate in that. They're going to die in exile in Babylon. God explicitly says in verse 9, they will not enter the land of Israel. These false prophets will not. And when they don't enter and they die, then you will know that I am the sovereign Lord. In other words, you're going to know when true prophecy is fulfilled. In verse 10, God says that these false prophets lead the people of Israel astray, saying peace when there is no peace. Now, that sounds familiar. Jeremiah said the same thing. Jeremiah 6:14. They have treated my people's brokenness superficially, claiming peace, peace, when there is no peace. Jeremiah is referring there not only to false prophets, he's referring to false priests. In fact, he says everyone, everybody that's leading Israel is saying, peace. You don't have anything to worry about. Jeremiah 8:11, they have treated superficially the brokenness of my dear people, claiming peace, peace, when there is no peace. Again, the people who are saying peace, peace, when there is no peace is everybody, from prophet to priest. Everyone deals falsely, as the preceding verse says in Jeremiah 8:10. This reminds one of Neville Chamberlain as he taps his umbrella on the floor, saying, Adolf Hitler's not going to come. There's peace in our time. Now, God then goes to a metaphor of a whitewashed wall. Israel is said to be a whitewashed wall, which is flimsy. Well, why would you whitewash a flimsy wall? So that you can cover up the structural defects, so you can't see how weak it is. And so God says in verse 11, Ezekiel, how about tell everybody that the wall is going to fall. The whitewash isn't going to stop it. What's under the whitewash is going to make it fall. Rain will come in torrents, and I will send hailstones hurling down and violent winds. That, of course, is referring to the Babylonians who are coming. The metaphor is of a wall standing and having to endure rain and hailstones and violent winds. Whitewash is not going to stop that. Rain will wash the whitewash off. Hailstones will beat the whitewash off and beat the wall down. And the violent winds will topple the wall over. In verse 12, when the wall collapses, will people not ask you, where's the whitewash you covered it with? I thought you said it was okay. And you covered the wall with whitewash, so we couldn't see how weak it was. We go now to Ezekiel 13, verses 13 through 16, and God continues. Therefore, this is what the Sovereign Lord says, in my wrath I will unleash a violent wind, and in my anger hailstones and torrents of rain will fall with destructive fury. I will tear down the wall you have covered with whitewash and will level it to the ground so that its foundation will be laid bare. When it falls, you will be destroyed in it, and you will know that I am the Lord. Destroyed in it is the NIV translation. Holman Christian Study Bible has within it, which is clearer. You will be destroyed within the wall. In other words, in the city that the wall encloses, you'll be destroyed, and you will know that I am the Lord. So I will spend my wrath against the wall and against those who covered it with whitewash, i.e. the false prophets. I will say to you, the wall is gone, and so are those who whitewashed it. Those prophets of Israel who prophesied to Jerusalem and saw visions of peace for her when there was no peace, declares the Sovereign Lord. We move down to Ezekiel 13, verses 17 through 19. Yahweh continues, Now, son of man, set your face against the daughters of your people who prophesy out of their own imagination. And so now, Yahweh is turning from the male-gendered false prophets to the female-gendered false prophetesses. God believed in gender distinctions, unlike the fools, the morons who populate the gender studies departments of our modern universities, who think that gender is a mere social construct. Now, son of man, set your face against the daughters of your people who prophesy out of their own imagination. Prophesy against them and say, This is what the Sovereign Lord says. Woe to the women who sew magic charms on all their wrists and make veils of various lengths for their heads in order to ensnare people. Will you ensnare the lives of my people but preserve your own? You have profaned me among my people for a few handfuls of barley and scraps of bread. By lying to my people, who listen to lies, you have killed those who should not have died and have spared those who should not live. Now, as Adam Barnes says in verse 17, these daughters who prophesy out of their own imagination are false prophetesses. These false prophetesses in verse 18 are said to sow magic charms on all their wrists. This shows that they are animated by Satan, because that's basically an occult practice to put magic charms on your wrist. Now, most translations translate it the same way as the NIV. These women put magic charms on the wrist, but the KJV has an interesting translation. These false prophetesses had pillows to all armholes. They sewed pillows to all armholes. Now, what in the world does that mean? I present that to you in case you are a KJV-only aficionado who thinks that only the KJV is inspired. Well, what does it mean? Sew pillows to your armholes. These false prophetesses also made veils of various lengths, as Clark says, probably some kind of ornamental dress which rendered women more enticing, so that they could the more successfully hunt or inveigle souls, who were men, of course, into the worship of their false gods. In other words, there might have been some kind of sexually seductive purpose in these veils. We have a translation issue at the end of verse 18. God tells these false prophetesses, "Will you ensnare the lives of my people but preserve your own?" The KJV translates the end of verse 18 this way, "And will you save the souls alive that come unto you?" In other words, are you trying to save your own lives? Option number one, translation option number two, or are you trying to save the souls of those that are coming to you being seduced by you? The literal translation shows that the translation could go either way. Young's literal translation says, "The souls do you hunt of my people, and the souls ye have do you keep alive?" In other words, your own souls that you have, do you keep alive, or do you keep alive the souls that you have of the people who come to you? Well, if it's the latter, you false prophetesses, do you really think that those who come to you, that you're able to keep their souls alive? You can't save them. Well, we'll take it the NIV way. You ensnare the lives of the people of Israel, but you try to save your own, but you're not going to save your own life. You're going to go down. You're going to die. Verse 19, Yahweh continues, "You have profaned me among my people." Now, the sins of these false prophetesses were especially grievous because they were prophesying falsely among those who were of God's covenant. They prophesied among God's people. Why? What was their pay? A few handfuls of barley and scraps of bread. As Adam Clark says, this was paltry gain for which they bartered immortal souls. Now, at the end of verse 19, God tells these false prophetesses that they have killed those who should not have died, and they have spared those who should not live. Well, we might ask, since when do these women, these occult false prophetesses, when did they kill anybody? Well, as Jameson Fawcett Brown puts it, what is meant here is that these false prophetesses have predicted the slaying of the godly whom God will save, and they have predicted the salvation of the ungodly who God is not going to save. That makes sense to me, because I cannot believe these false prophetesses actually kill somebody. Now, how in particular did these false prophetesses predict the slaying of God's godly people? Well, they threatened the captives in Babylon while promising peace to those who were in Jerusalem. At least that's the way Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown take it. We go now to Ezekiel 13, verses 20 through 23, and we will finish this chapter. "Therefore, this is what the Sovereign Lord says, I am against your magic charms with which you ensnare people like birds, and I will tear them from your arms." Yahweh is still talking to these false prophetesses. "I will set free the people that you ensnare like birds. I will tear off your veils and save my people from your hands, and they will no longer fall prey to your power. Then you will know that I am the Lord. Because you disheartened the righteous with your lies, when I had brought them no grief, and because you encouraged the wicked not to turn from their evil ways and so save their lives, therefore you will no longer see false visions or practice divination." That's because, why? Because God cut them off so that the demons can't give them false visions anymore? Or because God let them be killed by the Babylonians? I think that's what happened. The latter is what happened. The Babylonians put an end to that. Yahweh finishes up verse 23 and chapter 13 by saying this, "I will save my people from your hands, and then you will know that I am the Lord." And of course, the way that God saved the people from the false prophetess's hands is by saving a remnant of the exiles in Babylon and bringing them back in 538, 537 or so BC after Cyrus's decree freed them, and after Cyrus's victory in 539, destroyed their Babylonian captors and allowed the Jews to return to Jerusalem. "And then you will know that I am the Lord." Of course, they're dead now, but, well, they might not be dead. They're defeated, wiped out by the siege. They could have survived the siege, but whether they're seeing what happened from hell or whether they're seeing what happened from Israel, they're going to see that God knows how to prophesy through Ezekiel, and he's prophesying the truth, and you ladies are prophesying lies. So, ladies and gentlemen, on that triumphant note, we will leave the Lord's denunciation of the false prophetesses and the false prophets, and we will now be prepared to go to Ezekiel 14, the next chapter, which I will entitle Idolatrous Elders Condemned. So God is going to move from condemning the prophets, now he's going to go to the civil realm and condemn the civil rulers of Jerusalem. I hope to see you in that next chapter, and I hope you enjoyed this audio.